For many of us, the image of the modern sports agent was formed by the Tom Cruise portrayal of Jerry Maguire. The real agent that inspired the Maguire character is Lee Steinberg. His new book, The Comeback, describes how he came back from adversity to reestablish his career. We are lucky to be joined by us this morning. Joined by him this morning. Good morning, Lee. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Okay, your career helped define what a modern sports agent could be. When you look back over that long career, what accomplishments are you most proud of that people probably don't know about?
Back in 1975, before there really was real agentry, I started with the first pick in the first round overall in the NFL draft, Steve Bartkowski. And I had a philosophy handed down by my father to treasure relationships, especially family, and to try to make a meaningful difference in the world and help people who couldn't help themselves. And the thing I'm proudest of is that I only accepted clients who were willing to be role models and retrace their roots back to the high school community, set up a scholarship fund or work with the church or Boys and Girls Club, then at the collegiate level, endow some form of scholarship. Then at the pro level, set up a charitable foundation that would have the leading business figures, political figures, and community leaders on a board that would execute a program. So that's work done, putting the 220th single mother and family into the first home they'll ever own by making a down payment, or Patrick Mahomes, 15 in the Mahomies, that helps at-risk kids. It's making an impact in the world and using sports and the high profile of players to try to trigger positives off the field.
So now many people know the public image of the super agent, and your book, The Comeback, tells a much more personal story. So what made you decide that now was the right time to tell it?
Everyone in life experiences adversity to one degree or another. It could be financial, it could be health, it could be marital or relationship, or in my case, it could be alcohol. And life will set you back with these reverses. So the real question is not whether that will happen. It's inevitable at some level for everyone. It's how do you recover? How do you find resilience? How do you find light at the end of the tunnel? So I wrote the book for people who are still struggling and people who face their own life challenges. And it's got stories of Patrick Mahomes and Steve Young and Warren Moon and Troy Aikman and a series of athletes taking you behind the scenes and showing you the adversity they faced and how they came back.
So one of the things that struck me about the book was the way you sort of repeatedly came back to the concept that success can sometimes hide problems rather than solve them. For you, how did success make it harder for you to recognize what was happening to your life?
It did, because the pace was so frenetic, and it was on to the 64th first-round draft pick, right, on to the 8th first pick overall, on to a big baseball practice. And so the hardest thing is the concept of denial. I didn't recognize what was happening to me and how I was becoming addicted to alcohol and how my brain was being changed. So something has to trigger that. I had an epiphany at one point. I had shut down my office and shut down my condo, and I'm at my parents' house in West Los Angeles, and my only cogent thought was where to find more vodka. And I had an epiphany that I wasn't a starving peasant in Darfur. I didn't have the last name Steinberg in Nazi Germany in the 1930s. I wasn't sick in any fundamental way other than self-induced. What excuse did I have not to live up to my parents' values?
And so was that the moment when you really decided that you had to turn around to do something? And if so, what were the first steps that you took?
The first step is breaking denial. And then I found a 12-step program with a unique fellowship that gave me structure, and moved into sober living for a while and just concentrated on step-by-step a routine that brought me back to life. And I didn't say much about it, and I waited 3 years before getting refunded to do a business. So it was putting all my energy. The comeback was being a good father. The comeback was continuous sobriety.
And you know, as you're reading the book, you start out the book, and let's face it, you have this image, the super agent for those of us who've, you know, somewhat followed your career. You know, you see a guy in expensive suits, you know, hobnobbing with the rich and powerful. But in the book, you find yourself in some really extraordinary group living facilities. Talk a little bit about how hard that was for you.
I had led a mostly charmed life. Sort of dominating the representation business, working on sports-themed motion pictures, and doing a lot of charitable work, writing a couple best-selling books. And all of a sudden, I was in another phase of consciousness, which was not a healthy one. Again, the positive about it was that my friends and clients never abandoned me. People kept encouraging me. And in March, I turned 16 years continuously sober.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And so what was it about the 12-step program? What were the elements of the 12-step program that really helped you find your way to sobriety?
The first key is to accept the fact you're powerless over the substance, which is a hard thing to admit, and that your life has become unmanageable. And once you reach that conclusion, then you'll do any kind of work to try to do it. And the 12-step program has you evaluate your life, make amends to people, get rid of character defects, and establish a working relationship with a higher power, and the camaraderie of the other people in meetings is very helpful. So none of us do this alone. We all have the help of other people. And I had some brilliant mentors and incredible people supporting me.
Years ago, a friend of mine was in the 12-step program, and he had a guy in his group whose higher power was Cal Worthington. Do you remember he used to have a dealership? Yeah, that was his higher power.
Go see Cal, go see Cal, go see Cal.
You know it. So Lee, who was your higher power?
The group at the start. It's the sense that somebody was in charge of the universe and it's not me. It's just plugging into the life force that keeps human experience in a more and more positive way. A lot of people struggle with the religious aspect at the start, but if you just go with it and stop questioning any aspect of the program and just pour yourself into it one day at a time, you can make it back.
Outstanding. And make it back is not just to recover, but also to rebuild your life.
Yes. And so, you know, in this current phase, we have an agent academy where we help young people that want a career in sports. I have a concussion foundation because I've been really worried about the specter of head injuries in collision sports. And next year will be my 40th Super Bowl party. And we get big business, politics, and sports together. And we give out humanitarian awards to figures in pro football that make a difference off the field. And I've gotten real involved in bundling longevity philosophies, but for athletes, anti-inflammatory concepts like hyperbaric oxygen, red light, stem cells, all of which hype up productivity in critical moments and also recover players from injury quicker.
If you're a young man who's a top draft choice, the choice of an agent is really a huge bet. I am betting my entire career, my well-being, on whether this person can do the job I need them to do. You lose your agency because of an alcohol problem. How is it that you're able to convince these young men, and maybe some women, that it's worth betting on you? How did you do that?
Well, first, it's you have to prepare yourself for the fact I don't have a divine right to represent athletes. They have needs and they reach out. So you have to be prepared for all the questions. how can you guarantee us he'll stay sober? Which, of course, you can't. Mm-hmm. You've been out of it a little while. How do you still have contacts? But the most important skill in life is listening. It's being able to draw out a young man and cut below the surface responses to get deeper and deeper so that you understand someone's deepest anxieties and fears and their greatest hopes and dreams. If you can put yourself in another person's heart and mind and see the world the way they see it, then you can bond at a deeper emotional level. So we talk about concepts like short-term economic gain, long-term economic security, family, geography, being a starter, being on a winning team. And it's getting deep into the real dreams, hopes and dreams of a young man. And if you can do that and chart out a plan and take a holistic approach, which is I'm concerned about second career or what an athlete does then. I'm concerned with their health and welfare. I'm concerned with the fact they can benefit from being role models. So there are athletes out there who will respond to that approach.
Okay. And then was there anything about the second time around, you know, your rebuilding of your agency that actually made you a better agent than you were the first time around?
Oh, I think empathy and understanding of the challenges that people face. I had, again, lived a pretty charmed life, but all of a sudden I saw how quickly everything can evaporate. And so I think I had much more of a appreciation for the excitement and fun of being involved in young men's lives and trying to make it a better world.
You mentioned that your first contract, I think, was for Steve Bartkowski. How different would it be to represent Steve Bartkowski and the considerations, the issues you had to deal with, than it would be to represent this year's number one draft choice?
First of all, remember how different the economics are. You have Steve Bartkowski signing a contract that made headlines across the country, $600,000 over 4 years. and his first year salary was $40,000. Now, Patrick Mahomes is making $500 million. Teams at that point were making $2 million as their share of the national television contract. Today, it's $300 million. And we have jumbo stadiums and scoreboards and naming rights and fantasy sports and merchandising, a whole flotilla of ancillary revenue sources. But at the college level, it's been enormous change. There's NILs, which mean that players essentially are economic free agents when they come out of high school and go to college. And then they have a second bite at the apple with the transfer portal. There's gambling, where there used to be an impregnable wall between gambling and sports, and now it's merged. And there's conference realignment. So if Rip Van Winkle had gone to sleep back when I helped Bartkowski in 1975 and awoke today, he'd be in total culture shock.
And I guess these changes make it much more complicated for you to fully represent an athlete with all of these ancillary streams. How do you set something like that up? What are the sort of considerations for you're sitting down with a young man who's got a big potential? Do you handle everything from his negotiation with the lead, with the team, to endorsements, to publicity, all those things? That seems pretty complicated.
Well, the first duty and challenge is the draft. So you have to help a player through the scouting system. And so they have an understanding of how to do the testables, run a 40 quicker, bench press 225 pounds more, get them ready. So they go to training, and you have an elaborate training system that focuses on nutrition and flexibility and strength. And all of that goes into it. And then there's the character aspect of wanting to draft a player that's reliable. So that's the first step. And if you go through the draft together and a player gets drafted high and it's successful, that bonds you with them. Mm-hmm. And then the first contract for a rookie is pretty cut and dry because they have a salary cap. And when they're a veteran, there's great negotiability. But you're there for a player if they're angry because they don't think they're getting enough playing time, or they're playing in a system that works for them, or whatever their problems are. It's a very close relationship. Warren Moon played for 23 years, and we were together for 23 years. And I guess you asked me earlier what the high point was. It was presenting Warren Moon as he became the first African-American player in the modern era to become a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and I gave his presentation speech.
Now, backing up just a moment, if the player was upset because they weren't getting enough play time, what would you or another agent do? Would you call the coach, owner?
Have them go to the coach and deal, not be passive aggressive, but talk it out and get an understanding. The real question is, what more do I need to do to impress people to allow me to play a more active role? So it's not simply complaining. It's reaching out to try to find the keys to greater success.
Has with the college players getting paid now, the NIL, do agents now recruit from high school and then help the college players negotiate their college pay and which college they go to?
They have people called marketing agents that approach high school players and try to assign them to handle their negotiation with the colleges. And these marketing agents, unlike a certified baseball or basketball or football agent, have no real requirements. To represent players in football, you need to pay a big fee, take a test on the collective bargaining agreement, follow a strict set of regulations. There are state regulatory bodies, so you're very heavily administrated in it, but not these marketing agents. So the difficulty becomes, can I get a 17-year-old to be concerned with health, second career, role modeling? Maybe, but it's a bigger challenge.
So are registered sports agents allowed to represent, to take on clients in high school and guide them through the NIL process?
Yes, but they're representing them as a marketing agent, not as a pro agent. So they make a second decision at the end of college for who will be their agent, but make the presumption that if someone that originally started with them in high school has done a good job, they probably stay with him. So it's a challenging environment.
A few weeks back, we did an interview with about a book called Over Under, which dealt with sports betting. And one of the things that comes up is with the new sort of incredibly varied opportunities to bet on with online gambling, individual athlete performance, the opportunities for corruption are huge. How do you deal with that, Lee? Do you have your clients ever get tempted to, be involved in something like the recent indictment of basketball players for deliberately, missing things in order to cause bets to get paid off?
So I think that the ubiquitous nature of gambling has a number of destructive effects. First of all, it's going to create a new generation of gambling addicts because you have young people who, there's a thing called a prop bet, which means you can bet the over-under on every single thing that happens in a game. So it's not just one bet on a game, it may be 30 bets on a game. And a number of people, because they advertise nonstop during football and other sports, and create an illusion of the good life, there are people that are going to be hooked and go into debt. That's not positive. Secondly, you have the danger, which is an existential threat to the continuation of sports, that if an athlete gives inside information or tips to and gives tips to a gambler, in exchange for money. It gives the gambler an edge, or if they shave performance. And we've seen, as you mentioned, some of that happen in basketball, but we may see it happen more and more. And if it does, if people start to question whether or not these are have integrity to the results in sports, whether or not the referee calls are somehow fixed or the game somehow fixed. The inside information changes everything. So back in the day, I go to the hotel where Steve Young's going to play for the 49ers the next day on a Saturday night before the game, visit him, and I find out that he's been obliterated by a defensive player who ran into him in practice that day and not going to play the next day. No one in the world knows that, but people inside the system do. And if they call up a gambler and give him that information, it's worth a fortune to the gambler. So it's just a ticking time bomb waiting to happen. And if you start to doubt the integrity of the contest or the result, then you have wrestling. You have an exhibition. You know, and you don't have the popularity with the television viewers and the and everyone else who follows the sport.
Yeah. Now, backing up a little bit, you were talking about how you help athletes, you know, yourself, and you help athletes to start foundations and have a positive social impact. Has the role of the athlete as a public leader changed in meaningful ways over the course of your career?
Yes. Think about this. Not only is pro football the most popular sport in this country by 2 or 3 to 1, it's the most popular form of televised entertainment. So in today's celebrity building environment, the athletes have become the new movie stars. And they can use that profile to make a difference. So, for example, I had the boxer Lennox Lewis cut a public service announcement that said, "Real men don't hit women." And that could do more to change and trigger imitative behavioral patterns in young men than 1,000 authority figures ever could. So athletes have a profound ability to impact public consciousness. And so we can attack problems as varied as domestic violence and sex trafficking and bullying and racism and climate change, all through role modeling.
Lee, throughout the book, you argue that character ultimately matters more than pure talent. Are there some examples that you can point to that convinced you of that lesson?
It's all work ethic. And the most critical key is, what does an athlete do in adversity? The quarterback's thrown a couple interceptions. The crowd is booing. The center's looking at the quarterback like he's on hallucinogens for his play calling. Now what does he do? Can he compartmentalize, forget the past, adopt a quiet mind, and elevate his level of play? And then you find athletes with work ethics that, or athletes that don't test in terms of how fast they run a 40 in the testables, but just have an inherent ability to find the ball or to hit the ball or to shoot a basket. And so many, many times players with less, quote, overall talent exceed expectations on the court or the field because their drive is so strong and their work ethic is so strong.
Do you have a favorite sport? Meaning, are there athletes in a particular sport that you find to have better character, or they will have built up a better character through their years of learning that sport and developing their skills?
Everybody raves about hockey players being the most grounded. So naturally, I didn't represent a lot of hockey players. I find football to be a real character builder. And part of the charm of it is that the players go to college and they may not have taken every hard course or but they got some college environment in them. And so the character of an offensive lineman is usually very high in football. The fact is, all that the public sees is they get called for holding or they give up a sack. But when the team goes down the field because the linemen are blocking so well and score a touchdown, nobody praises the linemen. So they tend to have their own code, their own friendships, they're high character athletes.
So now negotiation is often portrayed as winning at someone else's expense. Your approach has emphasized long-term relationships. Why has that philosophy endured?
Because the key is avoiding confrontation and deadlock. And so, as we talked about earlier with listening skills, I need to understand the point of view of a team, an owner, or general manager. And I need to figure out, can I craft a win-win scenario where my client comes away maximally compensated, but at the same rate we fulfill team goals? And so the other point to it is that we do repetitive business, so that I'll negotiate with the general manager not once, but maybe over 20, 30 years. So it's really key to not personalize those negotiations. You're a warrior with a job to do for your client. It's not about your ego. You cannot let emotion get involved. You simply have to use your listening skills and then creativity to find a better solution.
Okay, so if a young person graduating from college today wanted to become a sports agent, what advice would you give them that wouldn't appear in a textbook?
Well, first of all, they might want to read my book, The Agent, which talks about it. The first key is to try to distinguish yourself as a young person. So even someone on a college campus can be writing articles on different areas of sports, opinions. The second thing is networking. I tell young people to go on something like LinkedIn and hit every single person in the world of sports and reach out. People older than you will like to mentor you. People younger than you will look up to you. It's people your own age that are competition. So put together networking skills and try to figure it out. Next year, probably, if you want to represent football players, you'll need a master's in some field. So do that kind of planning. Listening skills are key. And in recruiting, it's do research on potential players. Try to get an internship inside some area of sports. It doesn't have to be agency. It can be working for a team, a league, a conference, an athletic department, or sports marketing, or sports PR, sports television. Any of that will be helpful. It's getting experience. Distinguish yourself, get an internship, reach out and network.
Wonderful advice. Thank you.
The book is The Comeback, by Lee Steinberg. We've had the pleasure of speaking with him over the last few minutes. Thanks so much for spending time with us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We'll be right back after this. Please subscribe to the Mountain Money Podcast to stay on top of all the latest episodes of KPCW's Mountain Money.
If you have any ideas for Mountain Money, please shoot us an email at mountainmoney@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoy the show, make sure you leave a review no matter how you listen. And we'd appreciate it if you clicked 5 stars.